It's the same old game of words.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
So serious.
I am Iron Man.
This is a tasty burger.
Welcome to the In Session Film Podcast.
Welcome to this week's extra film segment for February 18, 2016, and it's been a scary week. I'm JD Duran.
And I just got back from seeing my therapist, and I'm Brendan Cassidy.
Yes. So leading up to this weekend on episode 157, we of course are going to be discussing The Witch, the latest horror film to come out, which is getting a lot of buzz. Mm-hmm. I've talked a couple different times now that it's in my top five most anticipated films of the entire year, Brendan.
Which is kind of interesting because this will be the second film that we have already seen in February that was in your top five.
I know. Crazy. Crazy. Yeah. All these films coming out already, so...
Jeez, February is not the wasteland of cinema as it used to be, I guess.
It's not. I mean, and of course, we just got done talking about Deadpool as well, which was very good. So February, for me, has been spectacular so far.
This seriously has been one of the best movie Februarys I think I have seen. Because we had Hail Caesar, which we all pretty much enjoyed. I mean, yeah. I didn't love it, but I definitely enjoyed it. Sure. Deadpool was also very good. I'm excited for The Witch and the buzz that it's been getting. You know what? Even the other films coming out this weekend, such as Race and Risen, I think the early reviews for them are not that bad, which is kind of good to hear. So February, good for you.
I know.
Good for you, Valentine's weekend.
I know. It's pretty crazy. Race is something that is on our radar to do on Extra Film here pretty soon.
Yeah.
So we'll probably maybe do that next week for Extra Film. And Risen, while it's not a film that I necessarily have on the radar to talk about on the show, I am interested in seeing it just because it's a unique angle at a very familiar story that I think is quite interesting. And I'll be curious to check it out because of that.
Sure. Yeah, same here. I'm definitely in that same boat. I just hope it doesn't come off as something that's a bit cynical, which I kind of worry based on how the trailers have been, but it could surprise us.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see. We'll see. For this week's extra film, though, I'm very excited. Although we are taking a little bit of a pause in terms of new releases. Although I'm very excited because very soon we are getting Oscar nominated foreign language films. Mustang, A War is coming out very soon. Mm-hmm. Embrace the Serpent is getting a limited release this weekend as well. So all these foreign language films that we didn't get a chance to see last year that are nominated, we are going to get very soon. We do plan on discussing them on the show, just kind of waiting on, you know, when we get them here locally. So we're taking a break from that because this week is all about the horror genre.
Your favorite.
My favorite. You know, it's been crazy because it's just not a genre that I love, but the last couple years, there's been a few films that I've really enjoyed. We are talking about those films for this week's poll, which I'm excited about. And of course, The Witch, I'm just bonkers excited for, which is just crazy for me.
I know.
So, as we lead up to this weekend where we're going to be discussing our favorite films, our favorite horror films of the 21st century so far.
Yeah.
We caught up with a few this week that we're going to talk about on this week's extra film. And one of those is the Spanish film, The Orphanage, which I know you're a huge fan of. Brendan,
I have come out and said on the show, I believe at least once or twice, that it's no secret that I'm a big supporter of this film, and you had not had the chance to see it yet.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited to hear your thoughts, to say the least.
Yeah, and this was a good excuse to finally see it, so I'm very anxious to talk about it. And then in the second half of the show, we are going to be talking about the South Korean film I Saw the Devil, which is another film that people on Twitter told me I needed to catch up with this week. Mm-hmm. And so we decided to talk about that as well. And I know former co-host of the show, Scott Pollard, is a big fan of I Saw the Devil as well. So nice endorsement from him as well. So it's been an interesting week, Brendan.
Like I said, that may or may not have been a joke when I said I just got back from seeing my therapist after watching these two films again.
Yeah, I know.
I will say, I though, unlike The Orphanage, I Saw the Devil is a film that you and I were both catching up with. So that was a first time watch for both of us on this regard, unlike how it was with me when The Orphanage.
Yeah.
This will be a great, it's a great excuse to finally watch this film, and I hope we have a great discussion on it as well.
Yeah, me too. I'm very excited to get into these films. Last note, and then we'll get into it. You know, as much as you're talking about the therapist, and it could be a joke, and I could also believe it. For my therapy earlier today, I was just browsing through Facebook and looking at pictures of my son that my wife had posted, and I tweeted one of them earlier, just like, I'm posting this for no reason other than my own catharsis right now. Like, I just,
you're such a dad.
I was just like, I just need something to feel joy about.
I will say, I did see that photo of Sam sleeping on his arm, using his arm as a pillow, and I smiled when I saw that. Yeah, that was too cute to just not post that. So I'll give you the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, that was an adorable little photo. He is quite the charmer, but. All right.
You have every right to be proud, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. All right, well, let's get into these horror films, man. I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah.
Let's get into it.
And here we go.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast Extra Film Segment. Uno, dos, tres, toca la pared. Uno, dos, tres, toca la pared.
Brendan, this is America. It's red light, green light.
Simon? Simon? Simón? Cariño? Cariño? Simón?
¿Simón? Simón, hijo.
All right, The Orphanage is directed by J.A. Bayona, although I like to say his full name, Juan Antonio Bayona. That just sounds awesome. It sounds like a name from The Princess Bride or something.
It's great, yes.
I know, yeah. And the movie also stars Belén Rueda, Fernando Caio, Roger Princep, and a few others as well, and I hope I got those names right. I really, really do.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we get going, though, as many of you guys know, I am a huge fan of this film, so I guess, spoiler alert, I love this film, but my co-host here, JD, has not had the chance to see it yet, and we finally use this as a great excuse to catch up with this film in preparation for our top three this weekend. Mm-hmm. And JD, you can even back me up saying how much I've championed this film in your presence a few times. So it's finally nice to finally hear your thoughts on this film, and I cannot wait. I don't know what you're going to say, but I'm hoping for the best. I'm going to toss to you right away, man. What did you think about The Orphanage?
Well, Brendan, not only are you a huge fan of this, you definitely have championed this movie, but we just don't agree on this genre a whole lot.
So we don't.
I was very anxious to see how this film was going to resonate with me because we just tend to go back and forth. Mm-hmm. So I watched The Orphanage earlier this week, and my experience, well, can you feel it, Brendan? Can you feel the anticipation?
Not really.
It's lingering there.
I'm actually getting bored right now.
This film wrecked me. I loved this movie. I think it's thematically very, very powerful. It's a very heartbreaking film, but it was mm-hmm. such a beautiful experience. The opening scene actually was quite interesting because I watched it and I was kind of distracted. I was working on some things from work or something.
Sure.
But that opening scene, even amongst my distraction, was very gorgeous. So yeah. I paused the movie and I immediately was like in that mindset of I got to come back to this when I'm completely focused. and thank God I did. I was so immediately supplanted in this world. I thought it was so beautiful that I wanted to have the richest experience I possibly could. And I'm glad that I did that because I think this film is really wonderful. And not only does it like initially kind of hook you in, it also kind of sets you up in a really interesting way before we kind of get to the proverbial arduousness of this mm-hmm. journey sure. that I think is really wonderfully executed. And the opening credits of this movie is pretty great as well. There's like an animation that kind of goes along with the opening credits, which mm-hmm. I feel like is rare for a horror film like this. I feel like you'll see it in other genres, but sure. not so much in horror, but I thought it was really fantastic. I would actually put this film kind of in the same camp as The Babadook or even Guillermo del Toro's The Devil's Backbone in the sense yeah. that these films are not interested in shock and horror, where it's more concerned with waiting and suspense and anticipation. And a side effect of that is that there's this dread that just seeps throughout this entire movie. And mm-hmm. like The Babadook or The Devil's Backbone, The Orphanage thrives on this emotional terror that is used to blistering effect here.
Yes.
And also like The Babadook, the ghosts of this movie, that I'll just say vaguely for now, are arguably an illusion. Mm-hmm. There's a perspective on this movie that is mostly through the Laura character's eyes. And mm-hmm. at the same time, we as the audience are kind of required to fill in some of those blanks. And I love the way they set that up throughout this movie. And mm-hmm. I think as a result, there's this palpable fear that we sense throughout. And there's a visceral quality that comes through in Belén Rueda's performance because of it that I think is really great. And the way this film lingers on atmosphere creates an unnerving suspense that mm-hmm. rarely pauses throughout. And at the same time, it creates sympathy and depth for these characters, and it makes the scares even more earned. And mm-hmm. the mystery has a lot more weight because of that as well. Thematically, I'm sure we'll get into this here a lot more, but it's such a fascinating psychological maze through the unrelenting mind of this loving mother. And as a parent, what we see depicted in this film is certainly a nightmare. It's absolutely a nightmare. But I think in execution and the way the film handles this narrative, I think it earns its emotion. And it's interesting because, you know, I've been comparing this to The Babadook, and I certainly have more I want to get to with that. But narratively, it actually juxtaposes The Babadook near the third act of the movie. It goes in very different directions.
I agree.
But like The Babadook, I think the ending sequences of this movie is devastating, but richly captivating. And the final shot of this movie, there is a smile on one of the characters' faces, and the way it's framed is impeccable. Mm-hmm. It left me wanting more of this movie. The way you've championed this film, Brendan, I think is very valid. I'm glad that you recommended this movie. I think it's terrific.
You've said this phrase a few times on the show, so I'm going to quote you now, but music to my ears. I'm really happy to hear that. I'm absolutely happy to hear that. I'm not saying I would have expected to go that way, but regardless, I'm so happy to hear that. Although I am kind of also glad that you didn't go into like an emotional like coma after this, after you had just become a parent yourself, knowing where this film goes. Because I actually started thinking to myself, actually, maybe JD shouldn't watch this.
But
I mean, we'll get more into those moments of the film a little bit later towards the end of this specific review. But what you touched on is exactly what I love about this film when it comes down to its narrative structure, to its script, to its atmosphere, to its performances. And even with the film's trying to get at thematically, everything you're talking about is exactly why I love this film. We are so in sync here. And I'm so happy to hear that what you got out of the film is what I think the film is purposely trying to convey. The first thing I want to talk about, though, is mostly going back to the performances for the most part, because you start talking about Belaine Royda as the main character of Lara in this film.
Yeah.
It took me a few viewings to watch this film to really kind of realize this, but I think she gives one of my favorite female lead performances I've ever seen in a movie. I would almost go that far. I mean, I'd have to really think about that as far as how I would kind of rank that among the other female performances I've seen in my life, but it's definitely one of my favorites because she strikes this beautiful balance between the heartbreak and trauma of this loving mother, but also someone that's kind of trying to rekindle with her innocence and her childhood in many ways. And that perfectly segues to what I think the film is kind of getting at thematically a little bit, and why I think the script of this film is kind of almost in many ways the unsung hero here.
Yeah.
Because you can watch this movie in multiple perspectives, whether or not you believe what is going on or if you don't. And there's a beautiful regression scene in this film that actually physically portrays that argument and makes the audience kind of go back and forth within this literal argument here, that the movie becomes about two different things based on how you view the movie. In one way, the movie is essentially about a parent's mental breakdown over what could happen to a child and the mental instability that essentially leads to. Or on the other hand, it's about lost childhoods, about lost innocence, and trying to, you know, kind of trying to reclaim that lost innocence in the way that Lara is so set on trying to, you know, reopen up this orphanage for a new group of handicapped children, very much like the friends that she grew up with in the same orphanage. There's a lot of parallels there. In fact, you could almost look at it, and I think the best way to put it, the story is Peter Pan from Wendy's point of view.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best way I can put it. And there are even direct allusions to Peter Pan that I thought were beautiful. And that's what I think is the unsung hero of this film, is how the script is able to play into the film thematically from both angles. And the film works in both ways. And I love every second of that. And it continues to add on to the emotional terror and the emotional horror that this film is also trying to convey, because I completely agree with you. It's not interested in, you know, the jump scares or the gore or anything like that. It's interested in building terror through drama. And I think it succeeds so beautifully in doing that, that essentially makes it that much more frightening in the long run. It's definitely a different kind of horror, and might not be the most traditional kind of horror that we might talk about on the top three of our main show. But I still think, even atmospherically and even aesthetically, this is still what I would argue as a true modern horror film, and I think one of the best I have seen of the 21st century. It might show up on my top three. I won't spoil that yet, but I am so happy to hear that you love this film. Yeah. I have a lot more I want to say about the film's climax, but I'll save those to my final thoughts. But this is one of the most beautiful and heartbreaking horror films I have ever seen.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I agree that this film certainly isn't going to be for everybody. It's not necessarily a quote unquote traditional horror film, which is why I compare it to something like The Babadook, because I would argue the same thing for that film in the sense that, yes, it is horror, and the way it treats its tropes, it certainly delves into some of that territory a little bit.
Sure.
But it's mostly about its allegories or its thematic messages. and how that is horrifying in itself. Mm-hmm. And I want to get to that here in a second. Before I do, though, you mentioned the Peter Pan parallels that are in this film that I actually had written down for final thoughts, and we can get, I guess, more into spoilers here in a little bit, but I'll just say, I'll just mention briefly that, you know, there's this theory out there that Neverland is kind of a heavenly place. It's kind of a place that represents death in some ways.
Sure. Yeah.
This film embraces that theory.
Yes.
As almost literal. And we can get more into that, but I actually found that really fascinating. But getting back to what you're talking about in terms of how there are a couple different perspectives here, and one of them is, you know, these notions about parenting and how you cope with a child who is, you know, kind of missing, as we see in this film. And that was certainly one of the biggest takeaways for me in this movie. So you hit the nail on the head for me being a new parent. That's one of the biggest things that resonates with me. And I've talked a lot about this on the show before, too, because one of my favorite things about life is this process of coping that we deal with in our lives. And this film touches on it in a really fascinating way. Very similar to why I love The Babadook as well. But this film takes a very different approach to The Babadook. Like I said, the ending is actually quite different. Yeah. But the root idea is there, and how traumatic and horrifying this process of coping can be, I think resonates heavily in both films. And in this film specifically, the Laura character, this mother, is so unrelenting in her determination to find her son Simon that has been missing for quite some time. And there are moments where she starts to crumble a little bit. And when she does, the film pauses to remind us how determined she is or how broken she is.
Yes.
And it gives such a beautiful heart to this movie. One example of that is when she is in bed and she's talking to her husband, Carlos, and she's just talking to him about Simon. And she's asking, like, do you remember why we got Simon? You know, was his smile, the way I could touch him and feel his hair. Like, you know, she just goes on to describe this love that she has for him. And it's so genuine and so heartfelt. And I think that idea challenges this other perception that Laura is kind of high strung. She has lost control a little bit. You know, there's a scene where she and her husband are in this group therapy, and she snaps at this group. I'm not crazy. I know my son is alive.
Yeah.
And so there's this balance between her kind of being chaotic, and you could perceive her that way, but also she's just a mother desperate to find her son. And through this process, regardless of Laura's mental state, she needs closure. Which is a notion that I'm very fascinated with. And again, we see how determined she is for closure. And it takes a toll on her, but I think it says a lot about our desire for answers. You know, in the opening credits, I mentioned that there was some animation, and part of that animation we see is hands ripping away wallpaper. And I think
very symbolic, I think.
Very symbolic, because I think a question that this film raises is what's underneath that wallpaper, which we see physically throughout this movie. Laura kind of tears this house apart trying to fight her son. But underneath the surface, underneath that wallpaper, there's this burning desire for closure, and there's this burning hope that she has that her son is still alive. And what's fascinating, and I know I'm kind of rambling on here, but you talked about how this could also be about her reclaiming some innocence, or maybe some other characters here trying to reclaim their innocence, because in my notes I wrote down that this process that she's going through also helps redefine what familial love is, because Laura was an orphan, she was adopted. In turn, she adopts this other kid that needed that same kind of love. And the climax of this film, I think, also encapsulates this idea of adoption.
Yeah.
Yet the bond of this movie is as robust as any familial tie that you'll see that is connected through blood. And there is genuine conviction in Laura's love for Simon that I think is rooted in her knowing what that feeling is like. And I think it makes the conclusion of this film even more provocative and heart-wrenching once you find out what actually happens in this film.
Yeah, and that's what I think is so strong about this film dramatically is, and I was talking about those notions of, you know, childhood and you know, reclaiming innocence and things like that, but you're absolutely right. In that process, it does teach Laura especially and the rest of the characters that are predominantly within the main struggle of this film what familial love is defined as. And I think it's very interesting because in this film, the fact that they are not bonded by blood is what makes them feel like they are closer together.
Yeah.
And it's a very rare thing to say. And another thing to even say, and it might not play a huge role into the film narratively, and this is not really a spoiler to say this up front. We will get into some spoilers a little bit later. But it's noted towards the first third of this film that Simon is HIV positive. And that is directly stated. And when you really think about it, it doesn't have a direct play into the film's narrative as far as where it really goes. But I think without it, it kind of stifles of their relationship a little bit because this was an orphanage that dealt with handicapped children. So I feel like it's another way that kind of brings her even closer to Simon because there's a bit of a familiarity to that in many ways.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
At the same time, this experience that they go through teaches her the idea about motherly love for basically the people that were, or the children that were her friends growing up at the same time. And it helps her kind of almost free the torment that they went through as far as where the mystery of this film lies. So her helping kind of save them at the same time, whether or not you want to believe that way, is also very provocative in its own way that I absolutely adored about this film.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that, Brennan. And I think the biggest thing that resonates for me and what makes those notions really come alive, again, is just how passionate she is, how determined she is, how that love is just full of conviction. And I think that's what makes it so fascinating is she's had these experiences in her life that, you know, were pretty hard. I'm sure growing up in that kind of environment, it's very unique. It's not quote unquote normal.
Sure.
But she gets adopted. These horrible things happen to her friends that she finds out later on. But, you know, up until that point when she adopts Simon, knowing his condition, you're right, there's a familiarity there. And throughout this film, though, what we see in terms of her love for her child isn't any different than you see with normal families that are connected through blood.
Exactly.
And that kind of love is incredible. It's very pure, and I think it resonates on some pretty high levels, especially given where this film goes, because it's not easy to watch narratively what happens in this film. It gets kind of dark, but that love resonates in some pretty strong ways that I think is pretty wonderful. It's really beautiful and gorgeous given its arduous nature.
I completely agree. And kind of in that note regarding the film's climax, I want to spend a lot more detail on that, which will obviously involves some spoilers. So for the sake of time, though, let's at least give our grades now, and then we'll use our final thoughts as kind of the backbone of our spoilers then. So I'll toss to you first, what grade would you give The Orphanage before we move to final thoughts?
As far as a grade for me, I would give this probably an A. I mean, I really like this movie a lot. I think objectively, there's a lot of strong elements here, and I think the subjective nature of it, very much like I was talking about Deadpool, certainly resonates with me. I think this is a terrific film. I give it an A.
I'm so happy to hear that, man. I would at least give this an A as well. But for how long I've been championing this film and how many times I've seen it and how often I've loved it and how I've continued to love it even more, I would go as far as to give this an A+ for me. This is one of my favorite horror films that this is one of my favorite films that I've ever seen. I think I once considered this as one of my favorite films of the past decade, as far as when I was trying to do my top 10 for that. I think I almost made room for it. That's how much I really enjoyed it. I'm a big fan of this film, and I would give it an A+. I would go all out and give this an A+. It's one of my favorite films. But as far as final thoughts, I do want to talk about the film's climax a bit, because I do think it's worth kind of helping to even exemplify some of what we felt the film was trying to get at thematically.
Sure.
And I kind of need to just let it out and talk about how arduous some of this is. So for now, we're going to get into spoilers until we end this review. So as far as the film's climax, and kind of talking about it first, and then I'll toss it to you.
Sure.
I want to talk about my experience seeing this film for the first time, because there is basically, as Lara is searching for her son, she's playing this game where these children hide these treasure or hide a treasure that belongs to this person, and they leave clues around the house, and that eventually leads them to finding that treasure, and that when they find that treasure, they get to make a wish.
Yeah.
That's essentially how the game works. So there's a moment where she finds out the hidden door to Tomas's little house, who was the deformed kid that was accidentally killed, which then led to all the children of the orphanage being murdered by Tomas's mother, which is very arduous. So when she goes to Tomas's little house, and then she actually finds Simon there alive, I was thinking to myself, wait a minute, that can't be the ending. That just can't be the ending. And then the movie just totally transforms and morphs into what the final act of this film truly is.
Mm-hmm.
My jaw hit the floor. When it's fully discovered that Simon was the one wearing Tomas's mask during that party, and that Laura accidentally locked her son down there in Tomas's little house, and in his attempts to try and escape, he fell down the stairs and broke his neck and was there for what was it, 9 months or
something like that? Yeah.
Just talking about it is absolutely arduous. And that's, but my experience when I first saw that, thinking it went there, kudos. And it's heartbreaking. Yeah. It's not happy. But man, I was so happy that it was actually taking the guts to go there. And it is, it's heartbreaking. It's so heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was pretty devastating for me as well. Before I get to that moment, I just want to say that I thought a lot of the mystery of this film, the exploration of Laura trying to find her son, like I said, that determination she depicts throughout, I think is pretty fascinating. Mm-hmm. And it gets to a moment where things really start to get real for her, and she starts to play that game that we kind of joked about setting up the clip. But it's
horrifying scene. That was scary.
It is. Yeah. It is chilling. It is absolutely horrifying. And you know me, I'm a big scaredy cat. So I was very much on the edge of my seat that entire time.
Yeah.
But where that goes thematically, it's really rich, but also narratively, it's really captivating to watch. And I think both of them are really working congruently there with one another. But yeah, I agree. It is devastating, because I think, you know, as much as we were talking about the process of coping and specifically how it gets into these ideas of closure, sometimes you want to believe something is real, right? There's these ideas of keeping hope and what that can do to a person. And sometimes that idea of belief in yourself, belief that something is going to happen, it doesn't turn out to work in your favor. There is a stark reality in life that bad things happen despite that hope that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And when Laura finds this doll that kind of sets up this game that she decides to play,
mm-hmm.
it's fascinating to me that it gives her strength. It so ties into that idea of hope and belief. But in the end, she didn't find what she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's devastating. But at the same time, it ties back to these other notions I was talking about before, where she did get her closure.
She did.
And when she got her closure, even though the answer wasn't what she wanted, she acted on it. And even though that action in itself, again, is very arduous in nature and it's pretty devastating, I think it says a lot about these ideas of familial love, how connected mm-hmm. she was to Simon, how much she loved Simon. And I think despite, again, her actions, and you know, you can lean one way or another on that, I think it says a lot about her love and what that kind of love can mean. And as a parent, I can sympathize with that. I mean, I would have been devastated too. And just watching her reaction when she finds Simon there on the floor dead, it mm-hmm. took my breath away. I mean, I was a mess. And like I said at the beginning of this, it wrecked me. It absolutely wrecked me. And even though I don't necessarily, like, you know, if this was a real life story, I wouldn't have agreed with her actions there at the end. But in execution mm-hmm. of this film, it's really beautiful in the way that it ties all these notions together about familial love and what it means for these specific characters. That last scene, I think, is so gorgeous. It's beautiful. Yes. It's absolutely beautiful. And again, ties into those Peter Pan parallels that we were talking about before. That last
It's Neverland.
It is. It absolutely is Neverland. That last shot of Carlos giving that smile as those doors kind of, you know, kind of fly wide open a little bit. And he kind of gives that smirk, I thought was perfect. So, despite all of this hard territory, I think thematically there's a lot of depth here. And it's just such a captivating experience.
Yeah, and going off of that final shot of that film, I think it's one of the most perfect final shots I've seen in almost any film in the past couple quite some time, at least I should say. And I think what makes it so perfect is right before he smiles, looking in Lara's direction. Well, it's Lara in death when you really think about it. Yeah. He discovers the necklace that he had lent her, and before he lent it to her, or when he lent it to her in the first third of this film, he said, "Return it to me when we find Simon." And I think that was, not only is that gorgeous, but it's gorgeous knowing that that necklace was of a Saint Anthony medallion, which in Catholic religion, Saint Anthony is a doctor and saint of lost items. So there's a lot of interesting parallels there. And him smiling like that is almost Lara directly telling him and him acknowledging that she has finally, maybe not moved on, but like you're saying, finally coped with what she was going through and finally got that closure that she needed. And somehow she was able to communicate that with him in that final moment. And it's breathtaking.
Yeah. And Carlos's smile there, I think, is a reflection of his closure in that moment at the same time.
Yeah, because he was the one that was most filled with doubt throughout most of this film, and that was a nice, kind of a simple and subtle way to show his growth as a character as well that I didn't even expect to see coming, because he was kind of secondary at some points of the film, but I love that transformation that happens, and it's very subtle as well.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I agree.
Yeah, man, but for the sake of time, though, do you have any final remarks on this film before we move on to the next part of our show?
No, the only thing I want to say in terms of any last remarks is we've gone pretty heavily into this film thematically and really what makes it resonate to us. I just want to say, in terms of this movie as a film and regarding some of the filmmaking of this movie, there are some scenes that are pretty breathtaking and chilling to watch. You know, we mentioned a few already, but there's one scene where Lara kind of reaches out to this psychic that, you know, comes into the house and tries to summon the ghosts of this movie.
The
film editing along with the sound mixing there is incredible. It's absolutely incredible. And as the audience, we're seeing what's happening like through these night vision monitors. So we're not actually in the room with this psychic when it's happening. We just kind of see it on these monitors. But the way they cut in the middle of that and the way they frame those shots, it's pretty, you know, it will raise the hair on your arms a little bit. It's pretty incredible to watch, and it's really well acted at the same time that, you know, really makes it work. So, and there's lots of scenes like that throughout. So I love the patience of this film. I think it's what really gives the film a lot of suspense. It's really well handled. So yeah, this film is rich in terms of its themes and its characters, but it's also really well executed in terms of its style.
Absolutely. And the performances during that regression scene are quite spectacular as well, especially the character of Aurora, played by Gwendoline Chaplin, I think her name is, who is the daughter of Charlie Chaplin, which is actually also kind of interesting in and of itself. But she is fantastic in this film and definitely the unsung hero of that scene more than anything else.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right about how the filmmaking is so key in taking its time to build suspense, but it's also not afraid to just let the scares rip when you do not see it coming. There is a scene in this film where someone gets hit by a car, and every time I watch the movie, I jump. I've never ceased to jump.
Yeah.
And it's a real shriek moment, and it is beautifully timed and beautifully paced. And great directing by Jay Bayona on that part.
Yeah, definitely.
And the last thing I'll say as far as, I guess, a final thought is that the musical score in this film is absolutely wonderful.
It's great. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, completely.
Absolutely love it. Mm-hmm. But we have beaten this film to death, and thankfully so, because I love it. Anyway, but if you want to read more of our thoughts in this film, you can check out our Letterboxd page on The Orphanage at letterboxd.com/insessionfilm.
Yes, I do have a few thoughts up there, but I didn't grade the movie because Brennan asked me to hold off until we talked about it on the show.
Yeah, remember when we did Back to the Future? Yeah. You were anxiously waiting my thoughts on that, so now we're even.
Yeah, so once this podcast goes out, I'll probably go up there and, you know, re-edit that review and add a grade to it. So
good.
Yeah, more to look forward, though. And if you agree or disagree with our takes, let us know by leaving a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/insessionfilm, or you can tweet us at insessionfilm, or leave a comment on Google Plus, or just simply email us insessionfilm@gmail.com. All right, coming up next, Brennan and I are going to move from Spain to South Korea as we discuss I Saw the Devil. God help us all, Brendan.
I know.
Stay tuned.
I have my therapist on the line right now.
Yeah, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This week's extra film is brought to you by the True Bromance Film Podcast. This podcast is hosted by our good friends Hiro and Barry, and these two have incredible chemistry together. Their banter is awesome, their film knowledge is also quite spectacular as well, and it's an absolute joy just to listen to these guys talk movies, and I'm sure you will have a great time listening to them as well. Every week, they'll review a new main release that has just come out, and they'll also have a top five section that relates back to that main review, kind of like a good cop, bad cop, or a best and worst kind of thing. It's a really great time, and they'll also talk about some of the other films that they've seen recently. So if you love movies and want to just hear two people talk about movies, this podcast is definitely up your alley. You could subscribe to them on iTunes as well as all other podcast platforms, or you can search for them on social media by simply searching for True Bromance Film. Tell them we sent you. It's absolutely worth your time, I promise. That's True Bromance Film Podcast.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast Extra Film segment. Brendan, cut the bullshit. You already lost.
Jeez, I never knew these podcasts were such a competition.
Hey, 듣고 있어? 물론 듣고 있겠지. 예? 아, 정말 재밌어. 예? 씨발 살다 살다 별 이런 재미난 일이 다 생기는 한테. 에이.
네가 누군지 내가 맞춰볼까? 장주연이. 연희동 사는 장주연. 맞지? 어때? 내 말이 틀려? 근데 말이야, 너 실수한 거야.
넌 나란 놈을 너무 쉽게 봤어.
넌 진지하게 날 죽이지 않은
걸 땅을 치고 후회하게 될 거야. 오래 걸리지도 않아.
All right, I Saw the Devil is directed by Kim Ji-woon and stars Lee Byung-hun and Choi Min-sik, and a few others as well, but I am going to stop there. if you're not familiar with this film, it's pretty simple. It's just about a secret agent that tries to get a little bit of revenge on a serial killer through a series of captures and releases. Mm-hmm. So let's get more into that, though. Brendan, what did you think about I Saw the Devil?
it's kind of a coincidence that not only are we catching up with this film due to our horror week that we're doing for when we talk about The Witch, but I've actually had a few friends tell me to watch this film. I've had a few of my local friends, not cinephiles within our cinephile circle, I've had friends come up to me and say, dude, you got to check out this film. It's on Netflix. Check it out. So now I finally got a chance to watch this, and now I can finally tell them, you made a good recommendation. I really like this film, like, a lot. I was a big fan of I Saw the Devil. I don't think it's as perfect as maybe something like The Orphanage, at least for me. I think there are a few things that I can nitpick here and there, but I really, really enjoyed this film. And I think mostly for two reasons. One, the performances really help ground this film for how over the top it is and its kind of revenge story aesthetic. Sure. Specifically, Choi Min-sik, who is mostly known for the starring role in an Old Boy, which is a kind of a classic of the Korean genre.
It's great.
Yeah. He is very good in this film. He scared the living crap out of me. I would almost call his performance here the Korean Anton Chigurh. Like that's I almost compare him to that. At least he has that same mentality to him. And even the you know, his counterpart in this film, Lee Byung-hun, who you mentioned, is the one. He's a secret agent trying to exact a continuous and repetitive revenge on this man for basically providing such a harm to this man's life as what he did to his fiance.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, for how gory and over the top and violent it is, it doesn't lose sight of what the film is trying to get at its heart, and thematically, at least for me, which is what I think is most interesting about this film, as it has a lot to say about how trauma brings out the madness and the evil in you, and how that ends up becoming a reoccurring circle for everyone else around you. Because you can argue that both of the main stars of this film, neither one of them are very sympathetic. They're both kind of evil in their own way, but it's interesting to see how one of them brings out the evil in the other one. But at the same time, at times you kind of pity both of them, because you can almost think neither one of them was probably like this maybe years before in their life. Something broke them. Something made them the way that they were, especially the quote-unquote villain of this film. You could definitely sense that this is a broken man, that something in his past forced him to become this brutal man that he is now, but how his actions inadvertently caused this other man, who was a good person prior, to basically break down and exact revenge continuously and brutally on this man, and how he is never satisfied. I love that notion, and I think it's actually very well handled. Maybe at times it does get a little repetitive, because the film is a bit long, and maybe sometimes I felt like it was a little too long, and I kind of wish it would have maybe progressed a little bit thematically, and maybe the second third of this film. But it's not enough to detract me from saying that I really, really like this film. But man, like The Orphanage, that you said, this is not for everyone. I mean, like, The Orphanage is scary and it's emotional horror. This film, if you're squeamish, don't watch it. That's all I'll say. That's all I'll say. But I don't think it's overexploited. It's gratuitous, but I don't think it's gratuitous for the sake of being gratuitous. I think it couples the film thematically fairly well. So I give it some points for that as well. So I really enjoyed this one. I really did.
Yeah, I'm with you, Brennan. I really enjoyed this film as well. And I guess just to kind of bounce off of what you're just saying with the film's violence, I agree with you that it very much coincides with the tone of this film and what it was trying to accomplish. And it didn't feel out of left field like something we saw in The Hateful Eight, where its gratuitous violence was jarring for that movie, where this was consistent throughout and they really went for it. And I think it works tonally with the film and its thematic messages, which I do want to get to here in a second. But first, I just want to echo your thoughts on the performances of this film. It is really quite spectacular. And you mentioned Choi Min-sik, who is an actor I quite love. I enjoy seeing him in all of the stuff that I've seen him in. Right. And with Lee Byung-hun, which is really fascinating with him, is that I haven't seen a ton of his South Korean performances. A lot of people will know him as Storm Shadow in the G.I. Joe movies. He was the T-1000 in last year's Terminator.
Yeah.
So he's had some of these smaller roles in American films, but I've never really watched him in a ton of South Korean movies. So to see him in this environment, I thought was really fascinating. But a lot of those performances that people will know him from, he certainly embodies a lot of that same charisma that people do like about him.
Right.
And because in this film, you're right, he's not terribly sympathetic. A lot of those same qualities that you see in like a Storm Shadow or even the little time we saw him in Terminator last year, he definitely has those same quirks about him here that I think is perfect for this character. But mm-hmm. what's fascinating with this film thematically, Brendan, and what I love about both of these characters is you're right that perhaps both of them aren't sympathetic, but I think in some ways they are. But yeah. you're right in terms of these ideas of how evil turns out evil and how easy it is to get stuck in this cycle that is impossible to escape, especially as men who are just so prideful. We are wanting to exact revenge, or we want to get physical at times. Like a lot as guys, sometimes our emotions get the best of us, and we see that with these two characters, because with the Koyman Sik character, this is a guy that I don't think was the way that he is previously. We see throughout this movie that he has something against society. He has something against the female gender specifically and how they've treated him in the past.
Yeah, and that greenhouse scene, that sets it up perfectly.
That sets it up perfectly. And we see that this is a guy who was molded by society in a way that became obviously just impossible for him to manage on his own. And he turned out to be this evil lunatic. And in the middle of it, it affected the Lee Byung-hun character because he became a monster as well. And we see that cycle throughout this entire movie. And on top of that, it's just a fascinating back and forth thriller. You know, there's this capture and release game that we do see throughout. And I agree with you, it can feel long and maybe overly done at times, but I think it does encapsulate this idea that, you know, revenge and how evil can turn people into a monster, how that can turn into a cycle. I think that notion is handled pretty well in this movie, and I think overall it makes for a fascinating film.
I agree, and I think one of my favorite aspects of this film is it has a very interesting take on the whole quote-unquote revenge tale, because when you see a lot of films where, you know, these kind of acts of revenge are basically almost kind of one-sided in many ways, what I think is most interesting here is every time the Lee Byung-hun character acts out a moment of revenge and torment against Koyman Six, the villain of this movie, it makes Koi's character that much even badder and that much even more evil and even more menacing. And he continues to progress even more evilly throughout this film. Now, what I like, though, is that Lee's character acts out these moments of revenge and torment on him during moments of when Koi is trying to brutalize either a woman or someone else. He comes in at the right times, which I think actually helps add a certain level of sympathy for Lee's character. But at the same time, it's interesting to see Koyman Sik's character get even more and more evil as this film progresses, simply because of what Lee is putting on him. And I love that progression, and it has a lot to say about how, you know, basically how revenge never really satisfies. It's kind of a kind of a backpedal on what the notion of revenge is.
It's a feeble notion.
Absolutely. A feeble notion. Beautifully said. And I think what's even better emulating of that is the film's final shot, which I won't give away. We won't go into spoilers here.
Yeah, it's great though.
But the final shot is a beautiful argument either for it or against it. There's a little ambiguity there that I kind of appreciated. Maybe it does lean one way over the other a little bit more, but at the same time, I think it maintains a level of ambiguity to let the audience take part in this debate about the notion of evil influencing evil and the notion of what revenge truly means, and I love that about it.
Yeah, and I think what's really fascinating, especially with the Lee Byung-hun character, is that the film certainly sets him up to be the protagonist here, right? Like his his wife or fiance is brutally murdered, and he is now wanting to exact revenge. Now, as we've been saying, he's not necessarily the most sympathetic guy. He does turn into a monster, if you will. But you brought up this idea that throughout the entire movie, there are several moments where he shows up to attack the Koi Min Sik character when these young females are really needing someone to save them, right?
Right.
But what's fascinating to me in the middle of that is that the film really doesn't linger on that.
No.
And in fact, it kind of almost throws that idea away, and it really becomes more about, yeah, Lee's character does kind of save the day, but it's really mostly about him attacking this guy and trying to torment him. That's what the moment is about. And in one particular sequence, he saves this, I think she's a nurse, and he catches up with Koi's character and does something brutal to him. But Lee's response to the girl isn't, oh, you're safe now, you can run to the authorities. It's not that. His response to her is, you need to stick around because I'm going to this guy up and he's going to need your help.
Like,
that's why he
he's going to need your help to get better so I can screw him up even more later on.
Yes, that's his response. And he doesn't let her go. Like, he keeps her in the room, and thinking about that for a second, like, this guy was about to rape and kill her, and he doesn't let her leave either. He wants her to help piece together this guy that he just brutally chewed into, essentially. And I think that's what makes the character really fascinating. And he's not really that sympathetic, but I think it very much supplants us in that notion that these two guys are monsters and they're stuck in this and there's no getting out.
You can almost say one of them is a monster at the start of the film and kind of gradually gets worse as the film progresses. And one of them kind of starts off as, you know, a good-hearted, you know, near married man, a secret agent in his other life, but that's beside the point. What's interesting is how he kind of progresses. He essentially becomes almost more like an anti-hero for a little while, and then he becomes a monster in and of himself. And I think it continues to bring out this notion of this evil cycle that is just going to keep going eventually. And how the film ends, again, I won't go too much into the spoilers, but what he chooses to do in the film's climax, you can argue is probably going to have the same effect on another one of the three supporting characters that were involved in that scene.
Sure.
And it might just continue on and keep going. And I just, I found that notion very interesting, and I'm glad that the movie chose to explore it in the way that it did, which actually adds a surprising amount of depth for a film that is so kind of gratuitous and very over the top and very gory, but I respect that it had a lot to say underneath.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like, in terms of this cycle, the film very much could have ended on a Departed kind of level if it wanted to.
Sure.
Like, it was kind of hitting in that direction, and it doesn't, but it's kind of in that same vein thematically, at least, and what it's trying to get anyway, at least in terms of this cycle and how people can get stuck in this violence. But
yeah.
All right, let's get to final thoughts and grades. Any other final thoughts, and what grade would you give I Saw the Devil?
Oh, some of the filmmaking of this film, I think, needs to be credited because it is so well directed and it is so beautifully shot. I know we also talked about the film being a bit too long at times. I mean, the movie is 140 plus minutes, so it's almost at the 2.5 hour part. Yet the pacing of this film isn't really the problem. In fact, I actually applaud the pacing of this film because it helps build a certain level of tension throughout, which I think is what helps retain this film as being a horror film. Because stylistically, it feels like a horror film. Narratively, it's maybe not so much. You can almost kind of put it within the category of something like maybe Seven and The Silence of the Lambs as far as how its subject matter is kind of, maybe how it progresses, I guess you can say. It might be more tonally to something like that. But I think it's made like it is a horror film, and I would definitely consider this a horror film for all those reasons.
Me too. Yeah.
But the pacing, I think, is a good reason for that. But like I said, I think my biggest criticism of this film, actually, I've got two, my two biggest criticisms of this film is, As I mentioned, I do think some of these acts of revenge, as far as the catch and release angle of this that you were talking about, mm-hmm. does at times get a little repetitive in the film's two-third mark that I was kind of hoping maybe at this point, let's start to progress with the film thematically, which it does do at the end. It does get to that point. But at some moments, I thought it took a little bit of a long time getting there, mm-hmm. and I felt like it was just repeating some of its notions just a little bit. The other thing I didn't like, and this might sound a bit stupid, we mentioned that Lee Byung-hun's character is a secret agent. I didn't like that. I didn't like that he was a secret agent because during these moments of suspense, it just made him feel too much like Jason Bourne. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't feel all that much tension that because physically, I felt like he really had a handle on the other guy and everyone else involved. I kind of would have maybe preferred if he was just like an ordinary police officer or something like that. I think would have made him feel more grounded, maybe a bit more human. But it's a minor nitpick. I think it's just something that would have made the film better for me than what it was, and that's really all it is. But I would give this an A-. I really enjoyed this film, with lack of a better term, enjoyed. Objectively, I think it's very good at doing what it sets out to do, and I was very compelled by it, and I would definitely consider this as one of the better horror films of the 21st century so far. So I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this film a lot, too. And in terms of horror, I feel like this was easier for me to sit through because I agree with you that tension isn't quite as suspenseful or thick as something like The Orphanage or It Follows or some of these other films that have really put me on the edge of my seat. But I still would classify this as horror. And the way that it treats the material is certainly that. And, of course, there's the violence of it as well. And to address some of the criticisms that you were just talking about, I agree with you that some of the catch and release stuff gets a little bit stale. I do like, though, that they do add some stakes near the climax of the movie. There's a familial element that is brought into the Lee Byung-hun character, and I did appreciate that, at least. I think that helped bring a little bit of humanity out in that character, where it could have just gone in a very conventional, easy, safe route. And I'm glad that it didn't. And maybe that made it a little bit more cliche, but I think the way they play on those tropes is actually quite fascinating. And I think a lot of it comes down to the acting, because the way these two guys bounce off of one another is quite riveting and fantastic. Absolutely. So, and I can see your points about, you know, Lee's character being a secret agent. It certainly does give him that Jason Bourne feel to him. And I agree with you that in a lot of the fights, the reason he's able to handle himself pretty well is because of that. And maybe there's something there that I'm missing. I recently just saw this, but I agree with you, though. It was pretty easy to see him win a lot of these fights, and he does. And maybe I appreciate that the film doesn't try to pull the rug underneath you. They really don't. Like, the film is very aware that he's a secret agent, and he wins the fights like he's a secret agent. So
yeah, absolutely.
At least they are aware of it, and they play on that. So, but I think the idea of them going back and forth, and maybe that's why it works, because he probably couldn't do a catch and release kind of thing if he wasn't this badass. So perhaps that's part of the reason, you know, it works narratively. But I really enjoyed this film as well. I would give it an A-. It's one I definitely recommend. And in terms of me and these horror films I'm watching and how the genre is kind of starting to slowly resonate with me more and more.
Yeah.
You know, these films are doing it for me. So that's exciting. So I'm slowly getting there, Brendan. Slowly.
I'm glad to hear that.
I still struggle to get through some of these, though. So.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Like, even though we disagree on a lot of these kind of horror films, some of the ones you struggle to get through, I will agree with you on some of those. And I mean, we've talked about some of those off air, and that might be a discussion for our main show, but I can see your point on some of those.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm still a scaredy cat, but I'm getting there. I'm definitely getting there. But anyway, if you want to read more of our thoughts, we'll have more on this film on our Letterboxd page at letterboxd.com/InSessionFilm.
And if you agree or disagree with what we had to say about I Saw the Devil, let us know by leaving a comment on Facebook or on Twitter, or you can talk to us on Google+ or email us at InSessionFilm@gmail.com.
Absolutely. And on that note, that should do it for this week's show. Again, just a friendly reminder that you can follow us on social media Facebook, Twitter, but we're also on Google Plus and YouTube as well. Just search Incession Film and you will find us on all of those platforms.
You could also subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Jabbercast, but while you're on iTunes, please leave us a review there. We'd appreciate some feedback there as well. You can also find us at the Lost at Home podcast, which is at lostathomepodcast.com. Our good friends there have been featuring our shows and reviews every single week, so we really appreciate their support as well. Our podcasts are syndicated every single week at geekcastradio.com and the Lamb Podcast Network. And you can also check out our Listen Now page, which is on our website at incessionfilm.com/listen-now.
And the Incession Film Podcast is supported by our super awesome listeners like you. If you want to help us, just go to our website at incessionfilm.com. There we have some great bonus content there that you can check out for just a small donation of 99 cents. You can check out the Incession Film store or simply go to incessionfilm.com/donate. And there you'll see a bunch of information and how you can help us. One thing, though, that I would highly recommend is checking out our mobile app where you can hear everything we do under one roof for just a one-time fee of $1.99. You can find that app on the Amazon market for Android devices, the Windows 8 phone store for Windows devices, and the Podcast Box app for iOS devices. Again, all those details are on the site at incessionfilm.com/apps. As for the main show this weekend, of course, as we talked about at the top of the show, we are going to be discussing The Witch and our top three horror films of the 21st century so far. So,
oh, yeah.
I look forward to it. It should be an interesting conversation. That could go in a million different directions, so we'll see.
We may have some arguments. We may have some arguments, but at the same time, there's still a lot of films I still need to catch up on to really finalize this list, as well as you do as well. But it's been a joy, or maybe not a joy. It's been fun, kind of trying to rewatch a lot of these films and seeing some of the great ones out there that I've still missed because there's a lot of good ones.
Yeah, because on top of these two, I have watched a few others as well, and I'm pretty proud of myself, Brendan. It's not a genre that I typically go for, but I'm genuinely excited for The Witch, and I'm expanding my horizon, so...
Glad to hear.
Yay me.
Glad to hear. I'm finally happy to hear you've come around to the dark side.
Yeah, we'll see. I still think there's a long way to go, but we're getting there. We're getting there.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we'll have some more arguments on the main show, which I cannot wait for. We finally get to argue about something.
I know. I can't wait. Any other final thoughts before we leave, man?
Everyone, if you haven't seen The Orphanage, please do. Go watch it, have a good scare, and then have a good cry. And that's one of the few movies I can ever say you can have both of those experiences in one film.
I know. I completely agree. As far as final thoughts for me, Brendan, just to reiterate, Hail Caesar, I really enjoyed. I really love Deadpool. If The Witch holds up, that... I think it has top 10 potential if it's what I hope it's going to be.
If it's as good as Matt Oaks says it is.
If it's as good as Matt Oaks says it is, absolutely. And then we'll finish off February with 999, which is also a film I look forward to. All four of those films could, as far as our main show goes, that's a heck of a lineup. So
that is not a February lineup.
It's not February.
That is not February.
I know. It's crazy. Like, so far... I've given, I've given Deadpool and Hail Caesar in my A range, right? A-minus range. I'm hoping that these last two will be in that same vein. It just, are we sure it's not November?
I don't know. Maybe Gods of Egypt will come around and screw everything up.
Yes, probably. So that's probably why
that's what we're not seeing. We choose not to see that already.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, it's been a good month, though. Hopefully this year continues. It's been fantastic for me so far. Anyway, thanks, everybody, for listening. Stay tuned for The Witch this weekend. Hope you guys enjoy it. We'll see you guys next time on the Incession Film Podcast.